Loud guys. Loud guys.
Awesome.
It is Wednesday, the 7th of March.
That's right. I have the... You let me do the intro, okay, pal?
Fine. Go ahead. Go right ahead.
Attempting to do the intro and singing my Two Loud Guys theme song, I have the lovely and wonderful Sammy Birnbaum, who's here filling in for Daniel Korn. And Sammy Birnbaum is kind of an omnipresent character in our podcast because
true,
he
I hear my name quite
comes
often.
Up very much in conversation, usually bad things. And he is still so far one of only three people to send us emails, and the only one to do so consistently.
Thank you.
Yes.
I was going to send an email this week, but then when I found out I was going to be on.
That would have been pretty weird.
It would have been weird.
Would have been kind of surreal to answer your own question.
I have the email.
All right, well, you could ask it anyway, unless you want to save it for when
it's really
Daniel
a question
comes back.
For Daniel.
Okay, so you'll save it for next week.
I mean, I can
or
tell
I can
it to
pretend
you.
To be Daniel.
No, it wouldn't work.
No.
It wouldn't work.
How
are you? I haven't
I'll still
seen
pretend
you in like a week,
to be Daniel.
So.
I'm pretty good. I'm good. I'm tired. I'm coming from, I went to a really great show last night, which, you know, yesterday was Daniel's birthday. Shout mm-hmm. out to you on your birthday, man, because it's a shame that he couldn't be here with us, mm-hmm. and that he couldn't come to the show last night that he
was
supposed
was
to come
what was
to.
The show?
It's a bummer. The show was a band called Mo, who are one of the big jam bands, and you don't really know much about jam music, do you, Sammy?
Somewhat. I mean, Adam was talking to me about Mo on Facebook yesterday, and I said to him, he was talking about Mo, and I said, Mo the band? He's like, no, it's just Mo, with period. But in terms of jam bands, I mean, I've heard New Stems do their kind of jammy stuff.
Right.
And I think, was it Mustache Hat? Is that...
Yeah, they're kind of jammy, if I remember
yeah,
correctly.
But, I mean, it's been over a year, I think, since
yeah.
I saw them.
Well, so, you know, yesterday...
If
I'd
you
be,
want to educate me,
I'd
go
be,
ahead.
I'd be telling people at school, you know, people would be like, what are you doing? And I'd be like, oh, I'm going to see this band called Mo. And then, they'd be like, what kind of music do they play? I'd say, like, jam rock. And people would be like, what is that? So they were like... two or three instances yesterday where I had to explain what jam rock was. So I'm just going to essentially use that definition I was using because
okay.
I think it worked pretty well. Because the idea of jam rock is that, well, so, you know, it's bands who make recordings, you know, in the studio. They release albums mm-hmm. with songs. But they sort of have, you know, their fans are kind of cults who recognize that the studio recordings aren't really the point. They're just kind of a house for the songs. And the point of the whole jam band thing is what they do live, and that they take the songs and, you know, jam them out quite literally. And, you know, through extended improvisation, that's kind of really influenced by, like, the way jazz kind of works, where
yeah,
they have,
yeah.
you know, they riff on whatever they're playing. And so they'll take, like, a song that on the album is maybe 4 minutes, it'll turn into 20 minutes mm-hmm. or 40 minutes, or, like, the whole set will just be one song in some crazy instances. And it's pretty neat. It just gets, like, you know, it gets people really excited. And that's kind of what I witnessed last night, was, like, people who kind of, like, are like, yes, like, this song that I was, this is the one I wanted to hear. And you know, and because it's
always...
But
doesn't that turn into, like, this is the song I wanted 4 minutes, and then 10 minutes later, they still haven't gotten the chorus because
well,
it's
no,
jamming.
It's not quite like that, because it's, you know, it's sort of like, people expect it to be different, you know, it's not like a traditional rock concert.
So
like,
the educated
the
fan would know that
Mo, song.
The band, is a jam band. And
yeah, every, yeah, like, exactly, okay. Fans of jam bands, right. Like I said, the whole kind of point is the live show, and they collect these live recordings, and they go to the live shows, and that's
yeah.
what it's all about, is that experience of being there with the band and feeling their interplay and seeing what kind of unique things they'll do. And for me and Tal and Brittany, our friends who I was at the show with,
I know them.
After, you know, because they played two sets. And the first set, mm-hmm. we agreed during the kind of set break, was pretty dull and soulless and wanky, you know, like... They're a very technical and professional band, but it felt like it wasn't really going anywhere, and they weren't really, like, feeling it or feeling each other or feeling us. And a lot of people in the audience clearly were disagreeing with that.
Which sounds like, okay, well, because that sounds like a weird, like, when you're with a band and you've traveled for a long time, you get the sense that they have a sort of sense of unity with them.
Exactly, and in the second set, that really, really showed. I think the first set, maybe it kind of felt a bit like they were just a bit disconnected from it, and they were kind of... You know, it was the beginning of a set. They're just kind of, like, dipping their toes in, just
okay.
seeing what they come up with. But in the second set, they really got into a nice groove where they were just really cooking and, like, really kind of the tides changed. It was really kind of night and day in how much I felt that they were actually, like, playing with their souls and not just their brains. And, like, and they did a lot of just interesting stuff. Where, like, they'd play, like, stuff that was a lot heavier than what jam bands kind of normally do. And then, but that would go into kind of, like, spacier, more mellow sections. It was just, it was really kind of enlightening how much that second set moved me, in terms of myself as a music listener in general is enlightening, because it reminded me of just how wonderful it can be to just get really into what a band is doing and, like, taking them in as individuals and then as a unit. But also,
have you been to other jam band stuff?
This was really only my second major jam band show, and the other's a band who is very different because it's Further, which is the current incarnation of the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, I know.
Who are kind of the original jam band, like the whole kind of all the ideas that I
because as soon,
about.
As soon as you said jam band, that's what popped in my head.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
Because all the all the ideas that I talked about are sort of were established by the Grateful Dead, where like fans
would go and listen to
to the live shows and stuff, and like it wasn't about the album so much. And then in kind of the 80s and 90s, there was a big boom of bands who embraced that kind of ideal, but sort of added a lot of different elements to it musically, where like they just, you know, the Grateful Dead crossed a lot of boundaries genre-wise, where they'd be playing rock and R&B and country and stuff, but the current jam bands really just go just all over the map and just play whatever they feel like, really. So it's pretty cool, and yeah, it just kind of, for me as someone who's always had to kind of take jam music with a bit of a grain of salt, because I often have found it pretty dull and stuff, and sometimes it can move me, but usually kind of like, sometimes like I find Phish really cool, and like I'm a big fan of the Grateful Dead, but this was the first time where I really felt like I got jam rock and got why people love it so much and connected with it, so it was a cool experience.
I find that interesting because it's something completely different than what I would go to a live show. Like, and you guys have talked about me going to a live show before on this podcast, but what I go for is to support the band. Mm-hmm. So I'll go to a show and spend $100 on merch, and I'll be like, oh, okay, I'm going to spend $100 on merch, and I also get to see my favorite band perform live. Yeah. But
yeah, and that's so the opposite of the ethos of
I know, but
culture.
But when I go to a show, it's like I want to hear the band play the songs that I love, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden, if they're turning this song that I know every word to into somewhere where I don't know where they're going to take it, it's like, oh, I can't sing along anymore. And that's kind of...
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's a little naive to say that, but...
Yeah, it is, and I understand what you're saying, too, but it's kind of like, it's the excitement of not knowing where they're going to go with it, and and realizing that they don't know where they're going with it, and just feeling it with them. And there's still, you know, a band like that, like Mo, you know, have a lot of songs that have very kind of poppy choruses and stuff, and like, you know, choruses where the people who were there who knew the songs clearly could sing along, but then it just goes so many other places as well. And it's just really cool how much they're influenced by progressive rock as well, which is one factor that made them boring at times, but that helped with this, you know, make the second set as interesting as it was.
I remember in terms of live versus recorded, what my preference would be, it's just, I remember Korn was talking about Bomb the Music Industry, and like, you liked that show, right? When we went.
Oh, that was one of the highlight shows of my summer, mm-hmm. for sure. I mean, among so many, but... Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I went, and I really enjoyed it. I liked the band. Jeff Rosenstock's a nice guy.
Yeah, sweet dude.
Yeah, sweet dude. But I still preferred listening to this really tight band in my ears.
And that's understandable.
When I go to a show, I mean, I understand it's part of the mentality. It's like punk, right? It is punk. Yeah, I'm not getting that wrong. So
that's right.
Yeah.
Found these issues. You're a punk rock band.
So maybe it was where I was sitting when I was there. Like, I was kind of leaning against the side near the back.
Right, but I kind of, like, you didn't really get into the crowd at any point.
No, I was kind of just like, I want to be here and watch them. I wanted to be at a vantage point where I could see them playing. Like, I always like looking at the bass player and see what he's doing and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was nice to be at a vantage point like that. But then, it just felt so messy, and I couldn't really hear what was going on. And I would catch little bits or like lyrics I knew or guitar riffs or whatever it was, but it wasn't what I recognized, and it just felt so out of place.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Bomb Music Industry, a band who, especially in the last few years, definitely have very kind of detailed recordings in the studio with like a lot of different kind of things going on at once and different instruments. And live, of course, they can't reproduce that because they don't have a very big band when they play live usually.
I'm not saying they were bad in any
of course.
Case. Like, I enjoyed the show, but then when we were walking out of it and Korn was just raving about it, I was like, I didn't really hear it that well, so...
See, I think for me and Korn, it was kind of like, you know, it was the excitement we felt from the rush of being in the crowd and being there with all the fans just waving our fists in the air and just shouting along with all the choruses and all the lyrics and everything that we relate to so much. I think it really helped. It's really, it's just such a different experience, like, and there's so many factors, I guess, that, you know, if you had been in that mass of people and really kind of feeling it that way,
it is about the experience when you're going to a show, and that is kind of, you make a night out of it. It's, you go downtown, yeah. You drink, you do whatever you want. And that's just part of the show experience.
But I mean, even just in terms of the show itself, like, you know, where you stand, as you said, is just as important as any other factor.
Like a mosh pit.
Part of why I think show. Because I saw Further over the summer, and like I said, I'm a big fan of the Grateful Dead, but that show, I was very kind of weird for me, and I was very in a weird mindset throughout it, and I was kind of bored, and my mind was trailing off a lot, and I kind of had a lukewarm reaction to it at the end of the day. And in, you know, there's a lot of factors to that, but I honestly believe that one of the factors is that it was kind of like, it was like an outdoor kind of amphitheater almost kind of deal, and we were sitting at general admission, so we were like way back outside of the theater on the grass.
Hold on, you're talking about like this field, I'm trying to picture it in my head.
There's like an open amphitheater.
General admission, is there something better than that in that kind of...
Yeah, because general admission was just the field outside of the venue.
And you sit
like lawn seating, really. But then,
so I'm saying, what would people that have better than this general admission...
They're actually like... in the theater, in the amphitheater, like on seats whatever.
Got it.
And so I feel if we had been in the amphitheater and been close to the band, the way I would have felt their playing and stuff would have been entirely different. As, you know, last night we were, like, right in front of the stage, and that makes a lot of difference that you're actually right in front of the band, like, you know, really kind of, like, getting each part and feeling the music because the speakers are so close to you and everything, and it's totally different to feel a kind of the distance that I felt from them that particular night.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited now to kind of see more of these jam bands and...
What have you been listening to?
Jam music.
Yeah. No, but I mean, When you travel...
Since last week, I haven't listened to anything new, really, because I've been reading a lot on
all
the subway.
All on me, then, I guess.
I've been listening to a lot of kind of, like, old stuff that I'm already into, as I always do, but, like, sometimes I will take new stuff with me, but I haven't been. Except one thing, I've now listened twice to the new Roar EP.
Okay,
what
do you think of that?
I'm Not Here to Make Friends. And when I first listened to it, it was really disappointing for me, because their first EP was just so exciting and fresh. And the second one, I guess I knew just, like, probably wouldn't have been able to stack up with my high expectations and the magic I expected from it. But I actually just listened to it again this morning before you got here.
I meant to listen to it a second time today, or rather, a third time. I listened to it again last night so we could talk about it.
Yeah.
But it didn't transfer it onto my phone properly.
Hmm.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the second time it grew on me a bit. I definitely enjoyed it more, you know, I guess separated from my expectations. Oh, and I've been listening to their first EP a lot, too.
Yeah.
I one day on the subway, I actually listened to it three times in a row this week. Just because I didn't want to listen to anything else.
And it's like, almost exactly 15 minutes, so you can plan out. You say, I'm going to listen to the Roar EP, and it's going to take me this amount of time to walk to class.
Yeah.
Or, well, that's what I do, anyways. Yeah. I know it takes me, like, 15 minutes to get across campus, so I listened to that EP. I've listened so many times.
Yeah, it was really such a perfect little pop record.
I guess I would agree with you that my problem with the newer one, it's good.
Yeah,
it's good. It's not bad.
I already like it a lot more than the first time, but it's less distinctive.
There's nothing that really jumps out. I'm not saying that they need, like, a single type hit song, but there's nothing about it that really jumps out at me and says, I really need to go back and listen to that again. Because it really stuck with me. It doesn't really stick with me, excuse me.
Yeah, so far none of those songs. And granted, their first EP grew on me over time as well. Like, I really liked the first, you know, the song on it, I Can't Handle Change, which is where the title of it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
But it took a while until I actually absorbed the rest of the material on that record.
First time I heard that, I was in the car with Adam, and he put it on for me. And it was just, I was saying, like, oh, what? First time I listened to the Roar EP, I was in the car with Adam. And it was just, it was so distinctive, the way the songs would go from one to the next, and there would be something so sharp about it that, I don't know how to describe it, I'm an English student,
no,
I can't use words to describe things, but when they had that a cappella track, I was like, oh wow, how often do you hear this sort of thing?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so refreshing, because I never hear something of that design, I guess. Do you want me to go down my list of what I've been listening to, or do you want to continue?
Yeah, I guess that's enough to say on Roar right now. I'm sure I will listen to it a few more times and talk about it with Daniel next week.
God knows how many times we've heard the first one.
Yeah.
So it just takes some time. But, I mean, you do have a first impression, and that first impression does mean something.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason you have those feelings about it. My first impression, as I just said, for their first album was very positive.
Yeah.
And it's not
and it comes down to
certainly.
Expectations. Like, I wonder
okay.
if I had never heard the first EP and just listened to the second one, if I'd feel differently about it, if I would like it more or less even. Probably more, though.
I mean, I would give it another listen, but only because I know you guys and I know how much of a big fan Daniel is of Roar.
Mm-hmm.
So that would encourage me to give it another listen, but if I was just listening to that second album on its own, I'd say, that's interesting, and then move on. Because when I'm listening to music, and ordinarily I just listen to music on the subway to school, as you do as well.
Yeah.
I put on something that will get me through the subway ride, whether it's 45 minutes, a half hour, et cetera, et cetera, and that's a 10-minute album.
Yeah.
And that's something, I know it sounds really lazy, but I just want to, like, set it and forget it in terms of what I'm going to be listening to. It's like,
yeah,
I'll
you
listen,
just want something. You
I'll
just
listen
want
to
like...
Foo Fighters for an hour or something.
Yeah.
And it just isn't worth the effort. That could do that could be a really good seg into the news, but we're not even finished talking about what we've been listening to. So
it's true.
Sorry about that.
What have you been listening to, Sam?
The Signs, that was first on my list, the Roar EP. second was, I decided to give the Michael Bublé Christmas album a listen. I don't like Christmas music.
Really? Even when it's swing interpretations?
I
really love that stuff. Like, I really
did
just
you listen
love
to the
color
album?
Covers. No, I haven't listened to Michael Bublé in a long time.
Okay.
For a background in my relationship with Michael Bublé, when he sort of came on the scene with his first album, it's after my dad had it on CD, and I thought it was kind of interesting. He was, like, this crooner and stuff, and so I kind of dug it, but, like, I've never really listened to him.
Well, my main attraction to Michael Bublé as a performer is that he's really in my vocal range, so whenever I'm listening at home or something, I can sing along, or I can sing in the shower, I can learn the songs.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's so interesting how different the way that we, I guess, digest music is.
And I would still, when I listen to music, there's always that aspect of, can I sing it? Probably.
Yeah.
Should I sing it? Like, I could sing Streetlight and Real Big Fish songs, but it's not really attuned to me.
Well, it's interesting, too, because it's sort of like the fact that we put so much emphasis on vocals and music in the first place. I remember my ex-girlfriend made some comment, like, I don't know, like, I was playing just, like, some Aphex Twin song or something, and she was like, it's cool that you have, like, instrumental music, and then, like, made some other comment a bit later about how, like, she kind of doesn't like she likes
levels.
Instrumental music, but she can't listen to it that long because like she finds it repetitive. And I just thought this notion was so crazy. I needed to try to set her straight on it. You know, I was unsuccessful for the most part, but because the idea that like that music with vocals and music without vocals are even separate entities at all comes from a place that I can wrap my mind around. But it's just like, it's all music, and to say that music divorced of vocals is going to be, like, repetitive is crazy.
Yeah.
That's
a crazy thing
to say.
You could think of it as vocals are just another instrument that's added
exactly,
to...
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's just... Okay,
and they help, they give us a human element to relate to.
Mm-hmm. And they add, I mean, in some cases, poetry to the music with the lyrics.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, and that's part of the human element that I refer to,
the lyrics
and the voice.
That's a good segue. The next thing I was listening to is Jim Guthrie's Sword and Sorcery LP. And do you know what that is?
Did you show that to me, or is that something else?
That was when there was a whole bunch of...
I think I listened to a track off that sent me.
There was a whole bunch of video game music on sale for some bundle, and that was one of the... Oh, it's such a fantastic album. I haven't even played... Sword and Sorcery is an iPhone and iPad game, and when they were creating, I remember reading an article about them creating the concept for it, and they were talking about it as not necessarily an art piece, but it was sort of a vision, and the vision revolves around the music in the game, and the music is so central to that experience that if the music wasn't good, it wouldn't make a good game. And I haven't even played the game yet, and this music is phenomenal, and I wish we could play it, but I don't know how to do that.
Well, we would normally do is we play the track and then we insert the MP3 later, but we can't really do that stuff without permission.
Yeah, well, I mean, how do you normally do it? Do you just send an email to someone who...
Which is why we don't play music ever. Mm. If we did, it's like when we played, like, the Elwynn, or I guess we never played the Elwynns.
Did you?
Or maybe
really?
We did, I don't know.
We did
play the Elwynns, we did. We played the Elwynns 1 week, and we played other more kind of local bands.
Yeah.
And we played, like, a band on quote-unquote, but these are all kind of accessible artists.
Yeah. Because they're, like, Toronto scene, and you're close to them.
Well, not even. Not close, like, not the quote-unquote band, but they're just, you know, they're quote-unquote, so they're just so damn cool.
But, oh, you mean, quote-unquote, did send you back permission?
They must have, because it ended up in the episode. I never talked to Daniel about it, I assume.
Okay, so he handles that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Next thing I was listening to earlier today, in fact, the Elwins, we were just talking about.
Oh, neato. I haven't heard their album yet.
Oh, it's so, it's great. Cool. Like, Korn reviewed, or Daniel reviewed it, but it's just so happy.
Yeah.
And
I read his review, and that's
really
basically what it expressed.
I haven't really given the lyrics a real close examination.
They're probably
yet.
Not too deep.
No, but I mean, I don't want to say, oh, it's so happy without reading. Like, for remember, you guys were talking about that song by Laura Stevenson about how it.
The healthy one.
Yeah, it.
Yeah,
it's
a really
very
upbeat
depressing
song
with
sad
with
lyrics.
Depressing lyrics. Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, so the Elwins, it just. I was trying to sit and do some work on my computer, and the music was just so upbeat and motivating, but so I couldn't work. I just wanted to, like, get up and dance, and that's a really good sign from, like, a summer album where it gives you that feeling of wanting to get up and dance.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, you haven't listened to it yet. That's great. Based on your recommendations, and I think Adam and...
But I saw the Elwins live, and they were great.
Okay.
So I'm very familiar
with
what they do.
Yeah, as soon as I heard that album, I looked on their website, and it was like, oh, they performed yesterday? Whoops.
Yeah, they'll probably be coming around a lot, though, this summer.
I checked their tour dates. Not for a few months, though. Next, because you guys were... I asked for... Recreational is not the word. Ambient music for a while I'm studying, so I've been listening to Brian Eno.
Yeah.
Music for airports, among other things.
So music for the airports is the one that I don't really tend to recommend, but it's definitely a nice piece of ambient.
Why?
I've just always found it kind of boring, really.
Well, I don't, when I'm working on an essay or reading or something like that, I don't want something that's engaging.
Of course. I guess I don't know, it's just one of his works that I've always liked, but I've admired it more from a distance and never really gotten too deep into it. Whereas, you know, I think it was Brian Eno himself who said something about how the kind of nature of ambient music is that it is made to be played in the background, but listeners are rewarded by actually engaging with the details that are in the music.
So was he criticizing music for airports or someone else?
Oh, no, he wasn't criticizing anything. He was just stating his philosophy
on
the music he makes.
Well, I would appreciate...
I don't even know if it was him. It might have just been a critic who said something like that. He might have had a different quote on similar...
But to your memory,
kind
it might have been him.
Topic.
Or
idea.
The thing about the ambient music is, for my purposes, just like I said, when I go to a show, I have very different motivations than when you go to a show. But for my purposes, it's so I don't have complete silence when I'm doing a reading, or so my mind doesn't trail off in an essay. So if I do get something that is so great that I want to listen to it, then that missed the point completely for me, because
other ambient works of his that I've just connected to more, and that I'd be more inclined to play while doing work.
On the topic of, I mean, still we're still talking about music that doesn't have lyrics, but there's this great mix in the video game Bit Trip Flux. You know the Bit Trip series?
I think I've heard you talk about it.
Okay, they're like this music. The first one is kind of like a game of Pong, and when the music comes in, all your actions in the game are to the beat and to the rhythm of whatever is happening on screen, and it's very well done. And Bit Trip Flux has this song called it's the first song in the album called Strange Comfort, and it's about 7.5 minutes long, and it's great. It's like this big pump up dance music, not something I'd normally listen to, because I usually listen to, you know, Michael Bublé and Streetlight and just ska and pop and that sort of thing. And this isn't the electronic.
I guess pop.
What would the Bit Trip stuff be like? Electronic?
I haven't heard it.
Oh, right. it's just.
If you think it's electronic, then that's probably what it is.
No, there's another word for.
Maybe there's more specific terminology you
there
can
is,
use,
it,
but
I remember talking about this with someone on
is a
Facebook.
Catch-all.
Okay, fine then. I think this is the last thing I've really been listening to this week. I mean, I usually listen to podcasts, and they're 3 hours long, so that'll get me through a whole day.
Speaking of podcasts, I watched a bit of an episode of Comic Book Man on TV, and it was actually pretty cool.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was actually digging it.
I still haven't checked that out yet.
It was neat, because it was kind of like it had that, like, Pawn Stars element, and then, like, like Daniel said when we were talking about the show, the podcast element really felt like it was there in place of the interview stuff you normally get on a reality show, and it really kind of worked that you get them.
So Kevin Smith never sets foot in the store. It's just
his Kevin podcast. Smith is only in the podcast, but you know he's there talking about the events of the show with the guys who are in the show.
Okay, so the last thing I was listening to still Michael Bublé again. He released an EP in 2010 called Special Delivery, and I had not heard of it until yesterday, so I quickly got it, and it's fine. I mean, there's one of the songs. Oh, let me just find the name of the song for you. Oh, Orange Colored Sky. That was in an earlier EP of his, so it's the exact. I listened to both of them. It's the exact same recording. They just tacked it onto a new EP.
Yeah, labels do that.
Yeah, well, the rest of it's fine. It's just more covers and.
So my thing about Michael Bublé is that like he's a talented singer, and it's nice that he does what he does, and that he's kind of.
But he's a
performer. Out there in the mainstream doing this. He is, and he's a good performer, but that's the thing. He's, as far as being an interpreter...
He calls himself a performer. When people ask him what he does, he says, I'm a performer. So that's different from someone who says, I'm an artist, who writes their own material.
No, I'm not talking about writing your own material.
Okay.
But I guess I am a bit, in a way, talking about the distinction of an artist. But, you know, it's kind of like, why would I listen to him when I can listen to masters, like great interpreters of these lyrics, like Frank Sinatra? On record, you could tell how deeply he felt every word, and you can't really, with Michael Bublé, it's a lot more on the surface, where he has a nice voice, nice to listen to, but you don't feel the same depth of
emotion.
Some
of the stuff that I've heard more recently, it's more of a... There's a lot of production behind this, and even if he doesn't have that same passion in his voice, the production quality makes up for it in terms of his...
But I think, too, like, you know, it's really nice and polished, but at the end of the day, it's like...
But you have to think of things like, if Michael Bublé wasn't here, you wouldn't have a new generation. Like myself, if I didn't have my grandparents putting on Frank Sinatra, and then after that, me putting on Michael Bublé, I wouldn't be listening to this kind of music. So
definitely,
he does raise a certain level of awareness with our generation.
Yeah, and that's what I say is definitely positive about him. But then, like, it's like great that he brought you there, but now you have all this other range to explore of artists. You know, because at the end of the day, he is playing, you know, an outdated style of music. I don't think it's a big secret that he's catering to a nostalgia crowd.
Of course.
As opposed to, you know...
But those are the same people that are going to be going to his shows and paying a fortune for tickets to watch a single
man. And then he gets the, you know, he's... The, you know, the people he work with are obviously smart enough to have also turned him into a crossover act by adding an original single on each album that fits onto the radio. Like adult contemporary radio. Mm-hmm. But, you know...
Speaking
that's
of...
That's just part of the problem,
the new
really.
Single, he... was, I was talking about this earlier today, but that Hollywood song is so bad, that Michael Bublé, and that's why...
I don't know.
Okay, it's just his new single he released after his new album, and then he re-released the album with Hollywood on it, so it's just really generic pop song.
All of his singles have been, though.
No, I don't know.
Everything at Home are really bland songs.
If you compare Just Haven't Met You Yet with... this new Hollywood song, it has a certain charm to it that this Hollywood song doesn't.
It's just... Maybe, but it's still pretty bland, I would say.
Yeah, Home is pretty boring. I mean,
they're all pretty songs, but they're all just, you know, they're all exactly what they are, and they're made for a very specific purpose, and I think he knows that.
The thing with me and Michael Bublé is that I'm going to be listening to his music because it's in my vocal range, and... Mm-hmm. No other reason than that. So when I'm hearing...
Which is so peculiar to me.
Well, I can sing along, and that's what I do when I listen to music.
Yeah.
And when he comes out with a new album, I get excited because it's a new... It's like 10 new songs that might be a song that I could sing, and it's in my range, so I'm gonna go listen to that album now. And that's just my personal use of Michael Bublé.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. Let's get to the news.
Sure.
I don't want to talk about this anymore. It's upsetting me.
Because I'm not appreciating the music for what it is?
Nope. That's not why.
Okay, then why? Why is it upsetting you?
It's not actually upsetting me. I was only joking.
Okay, fine. First piece of news that it's just quick, I guess. Celine Dion bought Schwartz's Deli.
Okay.
Do you know what that is?
No.
Okay, Schwartz's Deli is a very famous deli in Montreal. Oh. And, you know, Pantheon.
I guess I've heard about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, she and a bunch of other people, including, I think, her husband, bought Schwartz's. And a lot of local people were like, oh, no, they're going to change it, blah, blah, blah. And she said, no, we just wanted to buy it because it's like a landmark. And it's one of those cases where if you look into the people selling it, it's all old people that want to retire and want to pass on this business. So there's this, on one hand, it's like, I want to pass on this business because I don't want to work here anymore. But on the other hand, it's like, I've made this business for 60 years. I'm famous. Give me millions of dollars for this store.
Sure.
So Pantsers down by Bathurst and Wilson, they took a long time to sell because they were asking for over $1 million for the Pantsers name. And I think Schwartz's, I mean, if you have Celine Dion buying the, it's got to be expensive.
Yeah.
I wish I knew the specifics.
She can afford the million?
Yeah. I wish I knew the specifics. I haven't listened to it yet, but John Mayer just released a new single.
Yeah, I saw that.
Did you listen to it?
Nope.
Okay.
I wouldn't have bothered anyway.
I didn't, I remember he had some really rude comments. Like, was it last year or the year before? He was saying some really...
Racist? Borderline racist thing?
Borderline, yeah.
Yeah, he just has weird things sometimes. Yeah. He's just... You think he's a smart guy, but then he says stuff that makes you think he's a dumb guy.
Yeah, and I apparently he also... who was that artist you were talking about recently that had throat surgery? Was it Adele? You might have been talking... A couple weeks ago.
I don't know. I don't think that was me.
On the podcast, I mean. You were talking about it.
Yeah.
Do I know your podcast better than you do?
Probably.
Well, John Mayer had throat surgery, which I didn't really know. He had some sort of...
Elton John had throat surgery.
Yeah.
That was why his voice completely changed.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because if you notice, when you listen to his old recordings, his voice was really high, but then there's like that point when his voice became really low, and that was why.
Do you guys swear on this podcast? Can I read you something with...
No. This is family-friendly entertainment. Yes, we swear.
I don't think I can find it, actually, which is bumming me out. Okay, basically, Green Day announced that they're going to be making a new album really soon, and that they said that the theme of the album is going to be about fucking. And I have a bunch of quotes from one of the band members, and I can't find it right now, but it was pretty funny. Why put out that... Like, why is that news? I was just scanning it.
I mean, surely the news is that Green Day are releasing a new album.
But then it's this whole page interview with, like, we're going to be talking about fucking, and we're going to be talking about this and that.
I'm sure the idea of that is sort of to get publicity of, like, Green Day are back to just being dumb kids and not talking about politics anymore, even though they ever really talked about politics in their last two albums.
But it's just a change from...
They pretended to.
American Idiot to 20th Century Breakdown, it was such a... Change from punk to whatever you would call the strange.
I mean, I'd say both of those albums could just kind of be classified more as, like, rock.
There's so much...
You know, pop rock. Like, you know, there's all that kind of rock opera influence.
Yeah, rock opera. That's the term.
But I just wouldn't go so far as to call it a rock opera.
No, but, well, they did make a musical, you know that.
Yeah, that doesn't mean shit.
Well, it's turning a bunch of Green Day songs into something that's more suitable for a musical, and having their more recent album be a rock opera style performance is certainly easier for them to work with than the musical. So I guess with the announcement of the new album...
Yeah, don't get me wrong, the idea is that the albums were rock operas. I'm just saying that it felt like they were just rock albums influenced by rock operas as opposed to...
No, I know that.
Cohesive rock operas.
But more so 20th Century Breakdown than American Idiot.
It's true, American Idiot was, I guess, kind of felt like a rock opera. It had all the sweets and all that kind of business.
But when I hear that they're making a new album, it makes me think, and when you talk about, oh, is it going to be
American
dumb
was
kids
a good
or whatever.
Album.
Yeah, it was great.
Those were the days.
So I think, what are they going to be going back to the kind of music they were playing before? Are they going to keep going towards this blend of,
you know what,
of punk
and I don't care, because it's going to suck.
Yeah?
That's your prediction? I think that is my prediction. And I think that I'll be very pleasantly surprised if it doesn't suck. But, you know, it's sort of like, I don't think they need to think about going back anywhere or doing anything, because, like, Green Day are a band who've always been evolving. Ever since Dookie came out, you know, they were just a simple kind of pop-punk band, and then Nimrod, they kind of became... Nimrod and Warning, they kind of became more of an alternative rock band, and, like, you know, American Idiot was sort of just a continuation of that.
If they're going to be evolving like that, where are they going to go after they've sort of gotten that
You know, I
influence?
Imagine it's kind of going to be similar kind of punk-inspired pop rock that they've essentially been playing this whole time.
And I bet no matter what, Tyler will love it.
Probably.
Yeah, that's probably our friend Tyler that I'm talking about, who loves Green Day. The final thing that I had... Oh, before I said, did you know Glee is still a thing? That's still a show that's on?
I believe it, yes. Yeah. I guess I did know there, that.
I was looking into it because I was slightly curious because I stopped watching a year and a bit ago. Mm-hmm. But their ratings are tanking and they're losing viewership. And
it's a fad, that's
what it is. And I remember I was in the car with someone, I don't remember who it was, but we were on the car going to a show. And someone was saying how this was the point about a year or so ago where Glee was making original songs. Because obviously,
really?
they did a couple of original songs. The point is,
they were
bad. They were really bad generic songs. And someone in the backseat when I was driving was saying, oh, they're such great songs. I said, no, they weren't. They were awful. And I really took a stance about this. And I said, it's the same when you think about music.
The lesson is that people who listen to pop music are idiots.
It's the same thing as when you listen to music from, remember, High School Musical.
Yeah.
It's something, you gotta, and what I've done is, you gotta sit, listen to the song, I think.
Status Quo is a pretty sweet song. Don't even try to front on that one, okay?
I haven't listened to it in a long time, but
neither have I, of course.
It's a question that you think to yourself, am I gonna be wanting to listen to this in 5 years from now? Probably not. Is this good enough for me to keep in my library 5 years from now? And the answer with that new Glee crap was no.
But, you know, at the same time, it's in the nature of pop music to be disposable like that. But and it's okay to enjoy it for a week or for a month.
But that's not why they're doing it, for business reasons. It's easier for them to create a new song than to pay the licensing fees for all the songs that they're putting on the show.
Sure, but that doesn't change the way that we listen to it. And the fact that, you know, a lot of pop music is made for business reasons. It's just... You know, it's made to sell.
But a lot of Glee is the success of...
Of the covers.
Of their the covers of their sales on iTunes. Most of them are bad. There was one...
They're terrible.
They just sound
completely neutered. Every song they do sounds like a neutered version of the song it's covering because there's so much reliance on auto-tune and all this kind of like, you know, just make it sound so professional, obviously, because it's Hollywood television, but...
So that brings me to my final piece of news. Have you heard of a show called Smash?
Yeah, it seemed kind of interesting, actually.
Okay, so what Smash is, it's... Okay, you know how 30 Rock is a show about making... It's a show about a show. They're making a Saturday Night Live-type program.
Yeah.
So Smash is about a team making a Broadway show. They're making a Broadway musical based on the life of Marilyn Monroe. I watched 5 episodes yesterday.
Is it good?
It's better than Glee, and I mean, I have initial reactions, obviously, but... The first thing that they still auto tune. They still have a lot of it's a television show. They're gonna do that.
Can't expect anything but that.
You can't expect them to just put them in front of a.
It's not even that though. I'm okay with the fact, like, obviously the songs are going to be recorded in the studio.
So for example, but it'd be nice if they didn't have so much. You have a character going in for an audition instead of having them just sit there normal. Don't close mic them with them singing the song. Just have them sing naturally for the audition. But no, they got to make it this whole performance. And part of me hates it and part of me loves it. Because what I want to see, and part of the reason that I realized Glee wasn't going to be this show that I thought it would be, if you look at the pilots of both shows, they're fantastic. And I know, have you seen the pilot of Glee?
No.
It's this idea that you have a musical in the form of a TV show. And whenever the characters are singing, they have a valid reason for it. So it's like a person living their life, but it's one of those, if life was a musical thing. So you're walking down the street singing to yourself. You're in the shower singing to yourself. You're singing for a reason. And Glee became this, just, it became this, like, quasi-drama, sort of, instead of being a musical that's a TV show.
I'm sure it was always a drama, though. It was always meant to be a drama.
But, I mean, it more of like a soap opera, sort of. Mm. Like, oh, no, someone's sleeping with this guy, and I like that guy.
Yeah, it makes sense, though. That's where they would go.
That's the demographic, sure. But it's not the musical that I want to watch.
Yeah.
And I like musicals. So...
Well, when Glee first came out, I remember people said it was like this TV show that was a musical. And I thought that was a really novel idea, and I got kind of excited. Mm-hmm. And then I found out that it was, you know, a jukebox musical. You know, all fucking covers of popular songs.
Here's what's interesting. And I'm not trying
to... That's not interesting at all.
I'm not trying to sell Smash to you, but I will kind of inform you about it.
They're all original songs in Smash, I imagine.
Most of it is original stuff, and it's written by the duo, I don't know their names, the duo that made Hairspray and a bunch of other musicals, including, I think, the South Park musical. So, like, they work with that team. I don't, if you do know the names? Okay. And it is very well done. That's the thing. It's not, and as I was talking about the Glee before and their original songs are great in it because they're songs from musical. They're the kind of songs that I would invite my grandmother to come listen to because she likes musicals and she pays to go see musicals. So I watched the second half of the pilot with her and she loved it. And it was one of those seamless transitions between it's the person singing at the audition and then suddenly the camera changes and they're on stage in the full production and you have all the people going behind them. There's a scene where the director is preparing a number and the number changes into what the full number will look like on stage. And the most interesting part of this show Smash coming on is that if the show is successful enough, they're going to make it a real Broadway musical. And not like the show or the show based on the musical. They're going to put this Marilyn Monroe musical out there, which is an interesting idea. I don't know if I'd go see it. So I think that Smash show looks interesting. And I've kind of invested myself in at least 5 episodes. Mm-hmm. So when I'm finished school, I'll give it another month to let myself run a few more episodes. But it's interesting. It's better than Glee at this point. And I like musicals. I like seeing that sort of thing. The star is Catherine McPhee, I think her name is. She was one of the runner-ups on American Idol.
I remember her. I had a crush on her.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I realized after watching Glee and
when she performed Somewhere Over the Rainbow, it made my heart melt.
Oh, she does that in the premiere.
That's stupid. that's just cheap.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I won't spoil the rest of it for you, but she kind of does that. I think I realized from watching those two shows that I have a crush on... Well, I have a thing for brunettes that sing... That's just it, really. I have a crush on brunettes that sing really well. So, just watching those two... I mean, those voices, they're so great. Oh, and the other main character on Smash, she was Glinda the Good Witch on the Wicked shows.
Hmm.
After Kristen Chenoweth. She replaced Kristen Chenoweth
in
the second running. Anything else to talk about?
Well, next week...
What's next
Lil
week?
Wayne is going to be releasing his first single with Limp Bizkit. So, rather, Limp Bizkit going to be releasing the first single on Cash Money. Because, you know, Limp Bizkit have joined this gangster rap label, Cash Money.
Podcast.
And so it's like they're having their coming out party next week by releasing a single with Lil Wayne. I'm really excited for it.
I really like the idea that they just have all this extra money so that they're just scooping up.
Yeah.
People who they want.
Washed up rap rock bands who haven't been popular since the 90s. It's great.
Yeah, I just went through my list. That's pretty much it. Do you have anything else?
See, I didn't find anything this week, partly because it was just nothing very interesting or of note, and partly because I realized there are certain pieces of news where maybe I would have brought in had I been doing the show with Daniel, but that if I brought them in with you, we just wouldn't have had anything to really discuss about it. So that was sort of how I ended up bringing in nothing.
We talked about Michael Bublé and Frank Zanas, so I was thinking, what do I have in common with Corey in terms of what we listen to and bomb the music industry? So,
yeah,
which is pretty cool. So, do you want to do the outro, or do you have it on guitar, or is it just a...
No, I already played the intro.
Is there an outro?
No, it's only one song.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you can have it just fade slowly. No?
No.
Okay, so for March 7th...
Why? What are you doing?
Why?
I'm the official loud guy here. You know,
you're just sitting there.
Yeah, we're going to sit here in silence until I say that this podcast is done.
Fine. We'll sit here. I'm sure our listeners will love this. I'm trying to think of other things to talk about, but...
Why? Just be in the moment.
It is difficult, I gotta tell you, because do you listen to a different set of albums every week?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, I don't know what you mean.
Okay, well, I have my repertoire of things that I listen to.
I have albums that I go back to a lot, but there's definitely gonna be, like, different stuff sprinkled in there each time.
Okay.
But there are staples of my weekly
listening. I can only listen to the recent Streetlight albums so many times in one week. And then, like, when Daniel was making that, and I brought it up, I sent you guys an email, when he was talking about the idea that the album is good, but he won't listen to it a second time.
Yeah.
Do you remember talking about that?
Yeah.
So that kind of struck me as strange, because I don't have this extensive background with music that you two do, in terms of this list of things I need to listen to or need to keep up with. So if the album's good, I'll probably listen to it another 3 or 4 times. Like, that Elwyn's album, it's not the best album I've ever heard, but it's still pretty good.
But that, and that's the thing, it's sort of like, where we're always searching for what is going to connect with us the most, or resonate with us the most, and, you know, feel truly in some way creative and innovative
just
or
good,
something.
Then you're not going to...
And exactly, like, in a lot, you know, in many, there are a lot of albums I listen to that I would definitely say are just good and nothing more special mm-hmm. beyond that, and I'm sure Daniel would agree, but it's just like, you know, there are albums which are just pleasant, and it's like, well, I really have no reason to ever explore these songs again. It was nice to hear them this one time, but it's over now.
Okay. It sounds so sad. I think it sounds sad. Well, you think of the artist putting work into all that, it's just, yeah, it's good, I'll never listen to it again. Ever.
But it is the job of the artist who is selling their work to be scrutinized. And if they
sure.
couldn't handle that, then they're in the wrong industry.
Can't handle criticism. It's not their job to take criticism, it's their job to put the music out.
Exactly.
Whether or not they listen to the criticism is another
exactly.
matter.
I think it's sweet when artists say they don't, you know, they just don't bother, you know. And, like, obviously they have to admit that they see it, they know it's there, they're not blind
well,
to it, as Daniel pointed out last
okay.
time.
Yeah, right, right.
But, like, you know, like an artist like Neil Young, I really believe, just ignores that stuff because he recognizes the fickleness of the critics and of the listeners. But,
well,
you know, either way, if you're making art for the masses, you know it's going to be scrutinized.
Well, that's kind of why I don't really read music reviews. I mean, why would I? In terms of a video game, when you're reading a review, that's possibly a 30-hour experience that you may not have time for. But, for example, I saw a review of that John Mayer single. Why would I read a review of a 3-minute song? It'll take me 3 minutes to listen to the song and form my own opinion.
But, and then, that's the thing, the idea of the review isn't to
in some
get
ways,
another
in some
opinion.
Ways
it's, the point of the review
is to inform
is,
you.
No, 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 no.
What you should be listening to according to
no,
your opinion.
No, that's not what it's for.
Then what is it?
And Daniel explained this to me, and, like, I really kind of picked up on that, and it really has changed how I look at the reviewing the whole thing of it. You know, the point is not to... The point is so that after you've listened to it or watched that movie, you can then go and look at other, you know, professional opinions or whatever, and like... And kind of maybe learn new things about it that you wouldn't have thought of on your own and get different perspectives on the work. But it's important for you to take it in yourself first and form your own views and then explore the views of others.
But I would see that as a place for an opinion piece or a piece of criticism rather than a review. A review is telling a consumer that's going to that outlet whether or not you should buy this thing.
It is, and that is the purpose that ratings serve, in essence. But the review itself, you know, if you're a thinking person, should definitely be to those
but
ends.
A review can offer criticism and opinions, but it's ultimately telling the consumer if it's worth their time or not. Because they might not have the time to invest in this
in a sense,
whether it's
but
a
again,
game.
Again, it's really the rating whose job that is. Because, you know, music especially is such a complicated, subjective
but
thing.
But what is a rating versus a 7 or an 8 going to tell someone whether or not they should go run out and buy that album? It's just a number.
But it says something. If this album got a 3 and this album got a 9, I'd probably want to go with the 9.
Okay, well, I mean, there's...
Or maybe not, maybe I'm more interested in the one that got a 3, but, like, the point is...
Or you might think,
is,
oh, this, why did they bash this album like this? I want to go listen to it and see...
Exactly,
okay.
See what the fuss is about. Mm.
Okay.
I mean, it's true that the reviews are there, you know, to fulfill this kind of greater thing in the music industry, and of, you know, there's a lot of underhanded stuff that goes on there, and, like, and it is just kind of to put the information out there, but... But ultimately, it should be about exploring new perspectives on the work that you've already formed some kind of opinion on.
I guess I go to reviews before I see.
Yeah,
I
used to also, and I've kind of stopped doing that.
And often it'll just be the review that tells me about it. Like, if I go to see a movie review website and I'll see a list there, I'm not going to go to Movie Tickets or. Whatever that Rotten Tomatoes. I'm not going to go there and look through their gigantic list of what's been playing the past 2 months. I'm going to look at what's new and what's recently been reviewed.
Of course.
Because that's the kind of thing that I that would be in theaters if I go to the theaters.
Yeah.
But music, as it is readily available on the internet, there's just so much there.
All right, Sammy, play us out.
With what?
You know, with your... songs? Little, with your, no. Just say the end thing.
You told me not to say it. You told me it wasn't my job. I'm just a guest. You have to do it because you're the host.
I told you that it would be said when I was ready.
Okay.
Now I'm ready.
Are you sure you want me to do it?
You know, screw you. For Wednesday, March 3rd, 2012.
Seventh. It's the 7th. The 3rd is the month. You're right, oh. I should have done this.
Yeah, it should go month, day, year. Why is it day, month, year? That's ridiculous. That's absurd.
It's the 7th. Corn's birthday was yesterday, which was the 6th.
Yeah, and 7th, March is also not the 7th month of the year, but I'm used to seeing the date in a certain format, and...
That's great.
So, for Wednesday, March 7th, this is Corey Gardner with my guest...
Sammy Birnbaum. Oh, can I insert my thing here? No.
Insert what thing?
I have a webcomic, www.memorycomic.tumblr.com. It's a comic strip. I draw it myself.
It's pretty sweet.
It's pretty nice. Daniel likes it. At least I think so, anyways.
He's a very endearing character.
Yeah, me. You mean me.
Yes, but I was talking to the people about you.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
All right.
Cool.
We will see you all next week, and I will be less of a space cadet. Peace.
Bye.